Hello
And
and welcome to the inaugural podcast of Cinephonies, a movie podcast where we talk about movies. I'm Kelly.
I'm Mason, and I have no prior qualifications.
What's up? It's me, your boy, Crazy Mike. I'm Crazy Mike, and I'm on the podcast too. What's up? I'm on the podcast. Podcast.
Yeah, so
it's like gaming, but podcasting
about movies. Yeah.
Let's go.
So podcasters. Not at all like gaming. So what movie did we watch this week, guys?
We watched Big Fat Liar,
aka Blue Paul Giamatti.
This movie, so for those of you guys who are unaware, what this movie is about is it's a pre 9/11 world where the Me Too movement hasn't happened yet.
Is it pre 9/11? Didn't it come out in 2002?
No, that's actually a fun fact, actually. I was looking into this. And so it came out in 2002, but it was written and like mostly produced in 2001.
Right? Okay, that makes sense.
So actually there's actually a scene in the movie where, you know, what's his name? Jason Shepard, he cons his way into the pilot seat of the plane and drives it between the Twin Towers. And they actually had to cut that out.
Wow.
Because they thought it'd be insensitive.
Wow. Yeah. This is the investigative journalism that you get here at Cinephonies. We're uncovering
all the
truths of Hollywood. 9/11 was an inside job by Frankie Muniz.
Yep.
Okay. Well, now let's go back and, you know, get back to the real core question of the week, which is, you know, who's afraid of the big bad wolf? AKA Paul Giamatti, AKA Marty Wolf. So basically, so much to say. This is a movie about a suburban kid who is, you know, a big fat liar. He lies about lots of things. There's a whole sequence at the beginning where he lies like 3 times, so he must be lying all the time.
Yeah, and not just a simple lie, but an elaborate lie involving a faked telephone call, which he obviously gets caught in because, you know, that's the point of the movie.
Amanda Bynes is in the movie too.
That is true.
And her feet are also in the movie.
Thank
God. This was directed by, what's his face?
Quentin Tarantino.
No, the Schneider dude. Schneider is like a famous...
Dan Schneider, yeah.
Dan Schneider, yeah. He's like a famous pedophile.
Oh, yeah. He did all the Nickelodeon shows, didn't he?
Yeah, he had like a bunch of like, a lot of like feet stuff. I don't know if he was a pedophile. I think he was just
Are her
child,
feet really
like,
in it?
He was a pedophile.
At what point are her feet in it?
Well, I didn't write down the timestamp. I was, you know...
he was busy looking at the feet.
That's bad. That's why I didn't. Oh, God. That's Crazy Mike who said that. Crazy Mike is anonymous. Nobody can tie us to a place of employment. So we're fine.
I would like to just read the official little synopsis that comes up on the little side page of Google. So, you know, great investigative journalism here once again.
We do our research.
It says, wow, just as I said before. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? Not Jason Shepard, Frankie Muniz, or in parentheses, Frankie Muniz. You know how things work.
Holy shit, I just got it. Shepard.
Wolf. Yes.
They had a fucking God. Lie in the movie that made
yes,
that obvious too, and I totally missed that.
Well, this is like the Snyder cut, bro. This is like
exactly.
This is like Snyder's Superman.
Snyder's Big Fat Liar. Yeah, and, you know, I know this is an audio podcast, but my background on our Zoom call right now is in fact
Batman
v Superman.
Mine is Tobias Fünke. Okay, that's a bad joke because you can't see it's Paul Giamatti. All right, so who's afraid of the big bad wolf? Not Jason Shepard, aka Frankie Muniz, who has to prove that sleazy Hollywood producer Marty Wolf, aka Paul Giamatti,
AKA
stole his
Harvey Weinstein.
Allegedly. Stole his class paper and turned it into a blockbuster hit movie, Big Fat Liar. Traveling to Los Angeles with his best friend Kaylee, aka Amanda Bynes, before drugs. Well, Jason tries to break into show business, literally, Ooh, wow. Through a hilarious series of pranks and ruses, Jason brings one of Hollywood's most powerful producers to his knees. That's pretty hot.
Oh, yeah, the movie was definitely charged, like very sexually charged.
Oh, yeah?
That scene where Amanda Bynes is like pinned up against the wall.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God, Schneider, don't do it. Don't do this to us. I was really hoping that I would, I don't know.
You're really hoping?
I was really hoping that like nothing bad would happen. And nothing did, actually. I was surprised.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty clean movie.
Remarkable restraint.
Very, very.
There wasn't even like an overt romance subplot with.
Kind of. Bynes. It kind of was, I think.
Yeah, it was like implied, but there was never like, I don't know, that wasn't like really focused on.
I have no proof of this, but I'm like 90% sure there was a lot more like romance that was like later cut out. Because it felt like there was like a lot of setup for almost like romantic stuff, and they just cut it out at the end when they were like, yeah, this is kind of, Schneider, you kind of really went overboard with this one. I think the execs, like fucking the wolf guy.
The real life Marty Wolf.
Yeah. I felt like this was a good first choice because, you know, when I was a child, this was, you know, one of my first glimpses into the world of Hollywood, the backstage, if you will. And, you know, I really did think, you know, one day maybe I will write a story and a Hollywood producer will turn it into a movie and I will have to. This is not a joke. I really did think after I watched this movie that this is something that could happen. Little did I know that it is very difficult to get anything made.
Yeah, it is really interesting, actually, because Kelly reached out to us and was like, yo, let's watch Big Fat Liar. We were like, what is that movie? And Kelly's like, you don't know Big Fat Liar? You don't know that movie? And it's like, it's clear that this movie has implanted itself in Kelly's subconscious, like, super hard. Like, I don't think anybody else, like, has this, like, deep knowledge and love of this movie outside of you, Kelly. But
okay, well, I mean, that's fair. So I'm guessing that in that way you did not like it. I was having
I think number one, it had things that Crazy Mike loves. Pop punk, a pre 9/11 optimism.
Very true.
And
Munoz,
you know,
Amanda Bynes,
Frankie Muniz, the third one, maybe.
Okay, yeah. Well, some of my favorite things throughout this movie were, similarly, you know, going along with the pre 9/11 optimism is, you know, the bully's frosted tips. That really sticks with me, and his capital A acting. And all the montages. So many montages. So many needle drops. Can't go without a needle drop or a montage. But really, the true star of the show here is Paul Giamatti. Do you guys, you know, any scenes stick out to you?
I took notes while I watched this. Ooh, it was really more just like what I was thinking at the time, and most of it's like complete, you know, complete useless garbage. But I did really like all the scenes with the grandma. I thought those were great.
Weightlifting with the yard.
Yeah,
balls.
The weightlifting scene. The scene at the beginning where she has this like throwaway line about having a gun. I thought that was really funny.
That was so weird. I think that definitely stood out for like before she even enters the door. She's like, okay, my granddaughter's coming over today. Like,
who is it? I have
so
a gun.
Someone's knocking the door. I have no idea who this could possibly be.
Generally,
I have a gun.
All of the scenes with the bully, like. The bully subplot was really just like, why was it really in the movie?
Yeah, you know? one of the first things I wrote down was bully character is annoyingly poorly written. But I think that his relationship with the grandma later on in the movie really redeemed his character.
That's crazy, amazing. Because actually, in my notes, that's funny. Because my notes say bully character fucking rocks. he's fucking dope as hell. That's a weird, like, I guess, difference in opinion from critics.
Yeah, you know, different strokes.
Well, I remember when I was a child, this actor who plays the bully, I don't know what his name is, but he was in a fair amount of kids' media. Do you guys remember seeing his face around? No?
Honestly, I wasn't allowed to watch a lot of kids' media as a child.
That's why.
My parents started me on Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, this is maybe not going to make any sense to you though, then, but for some reason, I really thought that he was Pete Wentz. And I was very confused why Pete Wentz was in all of these children's movies. For context. Okay.
Yeah, who is Pete Wentz?
Pete Wentz is the lead singer of Fall Out Boy. Okay, never mind. We're going to cut that.
I know that band. No, we don't cut anything.
No cuts. It's all raw. We're taking this raw. This is so raw, it's going to impregnate your fucking ears, bro. You're going to have a baby in your head. Your forehead's going to get all big and swollen. And 9 months later, you're going to give birth to a movie phone baby.
A movie phone baby. Nice. I genuinely did not know what movie phone was. That's not what I was referencing when I made the title up, but
yeah, that's what I was referencing the entire time.
I looked it up and it just seems like one of those websites that has movie facts on it.
I mean, yeah, that was the real kicker, was that it used to be like apparently widely used hotline where you could call in and get
Isn't
your
there
movie
like a
information.
Seinfeld plot about it?
There might be. I don't know.
Kramer's phone number accidentally gets changed to
movie phone.
Yeah. Where it's like one digit away.
Yeah, that's like the period of time I think when movie phone was, you know, significantly culturally relevant, but it like came out earlier this year that there was literally a single like one person running the entire like day-to-day operations, like not even like an executive or anything, like a single employee doing everything.
Seinfeld is more prophetic than it knew.
Yeah, and it was actually yes, George.
It seems like we should have done the movie or the podcast about movie phone. I have a lot to say about movie phone.
That's all I have to say about movie phone.
It's our inaugural podcast. We have to go over our history.
The history. Well, I mean, my reasoning for this name was, you know, the classic title of a movie lover, cinephile. You know, it's like pedophile, but instead of small children, you love cinema.
I'm just going to go on record here, and I'm saying I'm anti-pedophile jokes. I prefer not to be implicated within them.
Okay, so Mike was not implicated in that joke.
That was all a Kelly and Mason thing. Mike was on the sidelines. He was not like, no, don't do it.
He was screaming on mute in the background.
I got muted permanently.
So yes, Cinephonies. It's a great name. It rolls off the tongue. You'll see it on top 10 lists across the world in minutes, really. But going back to the real core of the podcast, though, I want to go back to something that Mason said, which is that, you know, the bully is very poorly written, and I agree. Specifically, what comes to mind is this one moment where he walks in, or Jason goes to find Kaylee because he has, you know, this brewing plan of going out to LA with his babysitting money, and he finds Kaylee tutoring the bully, who I don't remember if he has a name, but I don't remember his name.
I don't think it really matters.
Anyway, Jason walks in and he's like, oh, I have your skateboard, took you long to get here, huh? Right? And he's like, Jason goes, skateboard, fully developed brain. I'll take the fully developed brain. And then the bully says,
yeah, but I have your skateboard.
So, you know, great writing.
Yeah, that I think Schneider was actually the thing that prompted me to write that down.
Amazing.
Okay. Maybe it wasn't the writing that was poor. Maybe it was specifically the acting of the bully that was incredibly poor. Yes,
there was lots of just open mouth laughing. Like, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, exactly. I also wrote down some of my favorite lines from Paul Giamatti. But if anyone else, you know.
My favorite lines actually too, but not from Paul Giamatti. Okay, I just think wrote down my favorite lines in the movie in general, like all of them. But yeah. It just happens that It was all from Rudy. You guys remember Rudy, the sister's boyfriend?
Oh yes.
Yeah. So they just happened. So all my favorite lines here. I've written them down. How you living?
Great line.
What's cracking?
Even better.
Peace out, little G. And then the fourth one, the ultimate line, booyah.
Oh, booyah, baby.
I have no idea why the sister was written into the plot. Like, what did the sister do to advance the plot?
He rode her bike that she clearly hadn't ridden for many years.
Oh, no, I think it was because she was supposed to babysit him, and it wouldn't make sense for a babysitter to abandon.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's old.
Or for a 14-year-old child to be left by themselves for a long weekend.
When he's, like, been proving a pathological liar.
Yeah, I always thought that was funny. He's like, here, I'm going to prove to you that I'm not a liar by lying my way to Los Angeles and then lying a fuck ton.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a lot that does not make sense in this movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's joyous nonetheless.
I agree.
Paul Giamatti's eyebrows.
And all of his fucking mouth noises. All of my favorite Paul Giamatti lines were his noises. They weren't words. It was just when he would make noise.
Can you do some ASMR impressions for us, please?
Let me see if I can remember.
Oh.
That was a good one. That was another good one. Honestly, it's really hard to recreate any of these sounds. I don't really know how Paul Giamatti was able to do them in the first place, but he really was just, you know, effusive with the noises.
Well, fun fact, this movie actually launched Paul Giamatti's career. This is the only reason.
Launched it to where?
You know, to being on Downton Abbey for a season. For some reason. Oh my god!
This is a direct line from this. the what's this? The Big Fat Liar to Downton Abbey pipeline.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, Amanda Bynes also in Downton Abbey.
Famously so, Frankie Muniz famously in Downton Abbey. Doesn't he have like memory issues?
Paul Giamatti or Frankie Muniz?
Frankie Muniz, isn't that a thing or no?
I feel like it could be. I don't know. I don't really keep up with the child stars of that era too well.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Frankie Muniz is up to, honestly.
Seems like you keep up to Amanda Bynes just fine.
I mean, who doesn't keep up with Amanda Bynes? I keep up with her in the hopes of seeing more toes.
Amanda Bynes is much more culturally relevant.
That is true.
Wait, you know, Frankie Muniz can't even remember the show Malcolm in the Middle. Because serious brain injuries.
Wow.
And I'm not saying it's because, like, a CIA PSYOP thing, because of the whole 9/11 thing, but not bringing it back to that. I'm just reminding you guys.
That Frankie Muniz did 9/11. You heard it here first, folks.
I'm reading doing some on the site research on Wikipedia.com. I don't know if you guys heard of it. Actually, .org, sorry. And I'm seeing that it says, there's a little typo here. It says, one of Hollywood's most bankable teens. I think we all know where they went wrong there. Great joke.
I don't get it.
Speaking of bankable teens, one thing that stuck out to me throughout this movie was the fact that Amanda Bynes was just clearly, like, significantly older than Jason.
I don't know about that.
She was taller.
Yeah, she was tall. I think she was just.
Really? I thought like she looked like she was definitely in high school, and he looked like he was maybe in middle school.
I think young men mature slower than girls. So I think
Frankie Muniz is actually older than Amanda Bynes. Yeah.
I guess it's just his boyish looks.
No, honestly, Mason, you know what it is? I think it's the fact that Dan Schneider made her wear those like weird like crop top shit. You know, like he was wearing like a crop top. She was like wearing like weirdly, like, you know, like weird, like, I don't know, just like a fucking feather boa. Like she was dressed up a lot more mature than she was, like she's a fucking, like whatever 10-year-old girl is supposed to be.
14. That's a big, you know, thing in the movie.
That was actually a reference.
That was a reference. Mike just made. Dumbass. Stupid.
Oh. Well, see ya. Just kidding. Podcast not over yet.
Assault on your ears continues.
I think
hope you brought another, a condom.
Oh, yes. One of the things that was also an interesting choice, if you will, is when he went to summer school and they randomly changed to like a very 90s wide angle lens on the teacher. It was just like very in your face, and they're obviously trying to do a reference to Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where there's just like a monotone teacher being like, blah,
blah, blah. Wait, this movie came out after Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yes.
Oh, I thought Ferris Bueller's Day Off was inspired by this. You know, it does make some more sense, you know, that way, I think.
Yeah, I guess it does make more. I mean, not gonna lie, like this movie was nominated for 45 Academy Awards. They actually added some. They added
extra categories. Best feet.
I don't like the
best Velcro jumps.
Best blue actor.
Best in script pranks.
Yeah, this definitely had some of the most wild pranks I've ever seen written into a movie.
I think my favorite part about the whole plan thing was when it was like, when there were like computer graphics to go along with each step of the plan.
Yep.
Like, I was like, wow, you had the time to really build it, write an entire program about your genius master. And like, some of those little plans made like no sense. Like, what? You're going to drive into the desert until eventually this man jumps out of the car? Like, that is a guarantee. Like, 100% sure this.
Well, I mean, it worked out, didn't it?
That's the thing. Like, so, like, with this movie, right, I was watching, like, so, like, for example, like, the bully, like, there was, like, why the bully exists. It was, like, oh, obviously the bully had to exist to be replaced the grandma. And it was, like, okay, that was some, like, thinking. There were some, like, logical reasons that some of the things existed. I think for, like, the first act, there was, like, a lot of, like, logical, like, okay, these characters don't exist for this reason. But, like, when you got to the midpoint, it really just felt like, I don't know, it just felt like there was just a lot of, like, sloppy, like, how the fuck did he not know he was blue until he got into the shower?
Yeah. I mean, I thought that even when I was a child, but you know, he was hungry like the wolf, and he was feeling it.
He was caught up in his own ego for a little bit, you know? There.
I don't know. I mean, I agree with you though. Like, even the entire motivations of going to LA because like he only cares about his dad earning trust. Fuck the mom. Only worried about his dad trusting him again and believing in him.
A feminist leader, big fat liar.
Yes. does not pass the Bechdel. Actually,
I was thinking about that, actually.
I think it does pass the Bechdel test. What? when Amanda Bynes calls and tells Astrid that her car is parked on...
Yep, on a dog.
I mean, I guess unless that dog is male. So we'll really never know.
You have to do some deep dives. I'm on it.
Yeah, we'll have to do some deep, deep dives to figure out this one. I love that even in this movie where they do not even go to a store or have no reason to need clothes, they have a shopping montage because we're in the early 2000s. And that's
where, I thought you were going somewhere else with there with like the product placement. Where there's just like
this
random
product placement.
Where he finds a Coke vending machine that doesn't take any money for some reason and has like 20 Cokes and then is hyper, and then that scene ends and then nothing. Like, just
Frank
Muniz gets highs on Coke for the first time in his career,
yeah,
but not the last.
More of a cheeky reference to like fitting in Hollywood, you'd be hyped up on Coke, ready to go.
Oh, that's dark.
I mean, what do you think? Do you think, honestly, maybe Dan Schneider gave Frankie Muniz some Coke and then last minute called up Coca-Cola, was like, yo, want to do a product placement?
I think Coca-Cola, like the cans are very clearly facing the front. Like, there's a reason it was specifically Coca-Cola.
Yeah, I think this movie, I don't know. I hesitate to ascribe any sort of like legitimate deeper meaning to this, but yeah, it seemed like it kind of said, it seemed like it kind of like maybe didn't have something to say, but like wanted to it wanted to portray about like movies and Hollywood.
Something it's specifically. Sometimes you have to tell the truth. What was it? What was the tagline?
The truth will set you free or something. No, like that. No, I don't know.
That's not from this one. This one it was you're right, the truth is not overrated.
Yeah, that's such a fucking lame tagline.
Yep.
The most unbelievable thing about this movie was people clapping at the end of watching Big Fat Liar, a movie written by a 14-year-old.
I also was thinking, like, okay, there's some interesting things about Big Fat Liar in general. How, like, there's a trailer before they even start filming it in a movie theater. Or when Jason Shepard watching that trailer lifts out of his seat. That's the best moment of the movie, really, truly, when he becomes a ghost. It's very spooky, very scary.
He levitates.
He levitates out of his seat. Surprise. Yes.
Are you serious? Yes. Did I miss this? Is this like the Grease car thing?
What?
The car just flies away into the sky?
Yeah, Frankie Muniz levitates 15 feet in the air.
No, he just like, yeah. But another, anyway, Big Fat Liar, like, would it have been, you know, the summer hit that they say it was going to be? I don't think so. I'm not so sure. But, you know, some of my favorite lines. Let's get back to that. I really like the one where he says, you know, this is a dog town. Worse, cat eat cat. We got fish munching fish. I just really like the idea of, you know, some fish munching fish.
Fishing fish.
Do you think that was a reference to, like, maybe lesbianism in the Hollywood world?
Couldn't be that. Because this was before women, so.
Oh, yes.
Couldn't have been that.
Okay, so I know I said I had only four favorite lines, but I actually remember a fifth favorite line.
Our podcast is just us naming our favorite lines.
Right, here it is. Okay, I don't know if you guys remember this line. Activate water.
I do remember that. Okay, so here's
can you give something that I... That line?
All right, yeah. Well, Mason, you can give the context on that.
All right, yeah. So the context of that line is they're like running through the back lot and they go to that place and the guy who was called a nerd earlier in the movie activates the like water feature, and I actually really really liked that scene, like that little bit specifically, because that is actually like, I don't know if you guys have been to Universal. Have you guys been to Universal in LA?
No, sorry, I my parents were poor, so
yeah, I mean, you know, I only went to Universal because they had a sick deal. They had a sick deal on tickets at some point in time. And did the backlot tour, and that is in fact a, like, I don't know, that's like some sort of like famous like movie thing. They talk about it on the tour and like a bunch of movies are shot there, but I thought it was cool that they actually used the water feature that is a like part of the backlot in this movie.
The movie was actually filmed on the Universal lot, and I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it is kind of cool how in, like, the prop warehouse, there's, like, you know, obviously the Jurassic Park dinosaur or the Grinch costume, or, and those are the only two that I could really identify. Yeah. But, yeah.
So two nitpicky things about this Universal studio. All right. First thing, there's only one fucking guard in the entirety of the studio. Like, the entirety of Universal Studios is just handled by one guard, and that one guard is like so understaffed that he can't find like two kids living in the studio
in the prop warehouse.
Clearly just not. It's
clearly not a job.
Well, I mean, once they go in there and close the door, like, how would he ever find them? Like, by going inside?
Yes, that's. I mean, I would assume they would check if there are people living in the studios.
I also All like right. how. Wait, keep going. Sorry.
All right, part two. For some reason, Universal Studios is only filming movies that require ridiculous costumes. Like, there was no movie that was being filmed with anyone in just, like, plain clothes. Like, while they're walking down, while Frankie Muniz and, like, yes. Amanda Bynes are walking down, it was just, like, them surrounded in, like Star Wars Cantina, Alf, like,
one of creatures. The people, if you look closely in that scene, one of the people in the costume is just, like, petting this giant chicken in the background. Very unsure what's happening there, but yeah.
Oh, I like how the chicken was a star. That was really good.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was a good bit. And then the chicken came out with the vest, and the glasses. Yeah, that was great.
I love when actors play themselves in movies.
Like the chicken.
I'm like, that's you. You're doing yourself. This is the
I end. I mean, the chicken was great. No one can deny.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just like going back to the thing about like all of the costumes. I don't know. I feel like a lot of things were done in this movie specifically with regards to the backlot to like really play up the like, I don't know, like the movie magic idea, mm-hmm. like the, like, you know, that classical idea of like, oh, like cool sets and we're on the backlot and all this stuff is happening, which it's was kind of a, like town. Weird. Yeah, it was like kind of a weird juxtaposition though to have that and then also have like the biggest asshole in the world
mm-hmm.
be like in charge of all of this and like I don't know. Seemed a little dissonant. Like,
it's complicated, it's ambiguous. It's
Black Klansman, all right? You know Black
Klansman? I have heard of that movie, but I have not seen
right,
it.
So the general idea, right? Black Klansman is this guy, he's a black guy in the police force, and he's infiltrating the Klan. And there's this one bad police officer who's really racist. But the rest of the police officers are not racist at all and are actually supportive of him. And so they catch the bad cop and then everything goes good. And everyone's happy. And then Barack Obama is elected president and kills thousands of people in Libya.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one bad person in Hollywood.
Exactly, yeah, and they got rid of him, Mr. Yeah. Wolf.
And everyone else, all of the rest of his staff are, you know, completely opposed to his unethical and general asshole behavior and all that. Very realistic, I'm sure.
Pretty exactly. much everyone he's ever met, ever been in any type of contact with, is willing to
just go along with
this elaborate like, 14-year-old's elaborate scheme.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking that he like became successful if like every single person that he knows in the industry just like hated his guts for working with him.
Well, I'm not gonna say this movie had a lot of anti-Semitic themes, but I'm just saying the antagonist.
I don't know.
I thought this movie was like anti-Semitic. I got anti-Semitic vibes from it. I don't know why. But that was the feeling I got. I was like, wow.
I mean, it's possible, but Dan Levy and Daniel Schneider, I'm pretty sure, are both Jewish.
I've met like loads of Jewish people who make like loads of anti-Semitic works. One of my really good friends is Jewish and he's like, 6 million? That's a high number. And I'm like, oh God.
I mean, part of that though is like a big part of, well, one of the like common thread amongst, you know, Jews is that some of us, as you know, I can speak for us as one of the tribe, some of us tend
Mason
to,
is a Jew.
I am a Jew, and that's on record. Some of us tend to like gravitate towards, you know, using humor as a way to deal with the generations of, you know, alleged cultural trauma that we have suffered, and like that's super evident in things like Mel Brooks, like, you know, there's a long history of Jewish people making, if not overtly anti-Semitic, then like definitely questionable through any other lens, works about Jews or about the Holocaust. And like, I don't think it's out of the question that like Dan and Dan were doing some sort of like, I don't know, odd parody of something. But
well, I'd like you to say what makes you feel that it's anti-Semitic. Like, do you feel that
that Jews Paul Giamatti was Jewish coded?
Yeah, that
I do feel like Paul Giamatti was Jewish coded. I don't know why, but I just got like maybe it's reverse. Maybe it's my anti-Semitism like rubbing off. But I don't know. I just think the idea of like a Hollywood producer.
Yeah, I mean, there is that like cultural understanding of like the like selfish. The
Jews control the media.
Yeah, the Jews control the media, and like Jewish people being like powerful and selfish.
I don't know. I'm gonna mostly shut those ideas down in my mind. I don't really think. Yeah, I just don't. I mean, it could be true that, like, yes, a lot of. I mean, I don't know. I just don't really think. I don't know. I mean, that's a very articulate way of saying I disagree.
I just want to say it was very clear that Malcolm from Malcolm in the Middle was Muslim coded. On this point, very clearly Muslim coded. So I want to say this movie was entirely about the Israel-Palestine conflict, but.
But it definitely was.
I'm just saying, you know, Jason Shepherd, he lived a rent-free, you know, in an occupied space.
All right. Well, does anyone else have any important things that they want to get in?
I have another like weird nitpick. Yes, or just like something I thought was funny. It was that like they're, you know, like shopping around for supplies to execute their prank with. In literally a like prop storage warehouse of you know, props of things that aren't real.
I feel like this is probably because they didn't want to have to get like a location permit. But I don't really know. But yes, it is funny. And then also the checklist is two items, and then they have a conversation.
Also, I'm confused about where they found this blue dye. And whether or not the blue dye was carcinogenic, because I don't know if that was human safe blue dye.
And then they're going for short term on his body.
They're going for short term and long term sabotage. All right.
They really want to fuck this guy's life up.
Fucking hospital, dying from like stage 3 thyroid cancer. He's gonna be like, God damn it, Jason! Oh, you bested me again.
Jason Shepard. So guys,
I alone in his room holding the monkey as his only companion.
Yeah, that monkey was fucking weird. I didn't know what to make of that.
He was he homosexual coded too? Was that supposed to be a gay thing, or was that like a? Because the monkey was male, right? It was a male monkey.
I don't know. It could be that, but it also might have just been that Marty Wolf is supposed to be just like incredibly weird.
I think there's also Dan Schneider has that weird thing with a monkey, like. His production thing was that monkey with the three eyeballs or whatever. Mm. Do you guys remember?
Nope.
Come on.
That could have been a Dan Schneider sex thing. I think this entire movie could be wrapped up in that.
So basically,
he just got Dan Schneider's rocks off somehow. He was like, he saw the guy sleeping with the monkey, and he was like, yes, yes.
Let's see. The other thing, I don't know, this movie felt like in the back like portion where there were all of the, you know, where the whole crazy heist is happening, it felt like there were a lot of references to other movies in there. Like there was an
obvious Good,
the
Bad,
and the Ugly reference. Like the helicopter gave me like Apocalypse Now vibes.
Just because it's a helicopter?
Yeah, exactly. It was a helicopter.
And he mentioned Vietnam.
Exactly. That was why I got Apocalypse Now vibes. But I did.
That was probably
loved
my favorite character, honestly. The old stunt.
The stunt guy.
He was probably Republican. Putting that out there. That guy was almost certainly voted for Trump in the 2016 election.
If he was still alive. Apparently he was a million years old.
Yeah. Pretty sure that no one's ever lived to be 1,014 years. So.
But that shot of Paul Giamatti standing in the freeway with the helicopter approaching behind him,
yeah, I really liked. That's like the only cinematic shot of the whole movie. It's kind of insane. It's like, okay, and now we will hire a cinematographer for this shot, and then for the rest, no, just all rule of thirds, shoulder to shoulder.
Okay, yeah. So I got some questions.
Okay.
Ask away.
What was the thing in the 90s? Okay, so this, I don't know if this was, like, I felt like this is very much this thing of the 90s, which is, like, inviting a clown over to your house to then beat up.
Yeah, that was weird. Is the beating up of clowns, like, a normal thing, or is that a Hollywood thing?
I've seen that before. I've seen
that, like, I think it's gotta be another Dan Snyder sex.
Schneider was like, you can borrow my clown outfit for this. Like, what?
I mean, it's also just a curious choice that after, you know, the one experience that he did have being a clown, that Marty Wolf would go and become a clown.
Maybe he liked it.
That's what I'm saying. Dan Snyder, sex thing.
Yeah. But the thing about that, though, is like, you know, that was a part of their plan. So my understanding was that Jason and Kaylee, like, had some idea, some knowledge that Marty Wolf was going to get the shit beat out of him by a bunch of kids if he showed up as a clown to this thing, which makes me think that the clown beating up thing is, like, you know, not just like a one-off or two-off thing, that was, like, widely accepted.
I think that clowns being beat up is a trope that I've seen before.
I think it is too, because now that I'm thinking about it, when I was a child, I was like, oh yeah, you beat up the clown. And I feel like I've seen other, but I've never seen it in, like, real life, but I've seen it in, like, TV shows, like, get him, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I feel like
clown is a pinata.
I mean, this is essentially, like, a big-budget Disney Channel movie or something. But, you know, we love it all the same.
Clowns are gay. Bisexual reading. The same. Hated by society. Is like Israel. A strong rock surrounded by enemies. Attacked from all sides.
Yeah, and we are now officially a Zionist film podcast.
I just go past it. Free Israel. Free Israel from...
I'm amazed that they got Sandra Oh. I mean, Sandra Oh wasn't that big back then, but, you know, we love Sandra Oh. She
was
looks
Will Ferrell there for a second? The fursuit guy? Is that Will Ferrell?
The fur man, Mr. Stew.
Oh.
Or whatever. No.
Dude, I love how Turk from Scrubs is just like, yeah, okay. Like you might have cost me my job, but, like, fuck.
Was this. Will Ferrell in 2001 probably, like, a fairly high point of his career in a 5-second cameo in Big Fat Liar?
Maybe, dude. Fucking Donald Trump was in Home Alone 2 or whatever.
That is true.
Yeah, but he had some lines.
All right, so, okay. Now that we've discussed that in full, I've got another question.
All right, bring it on.
So I understand phase one. Phase one is preparing the prank. Phase two is, like, doing the prank, right?
And then there were, like, seven other phases.
No. Then there was, like, phase three, and phase three was the twist, right?
Yeah.
And the twist is just him going... To the party
and then the
guy asking for help. That was the twist. Like, that was the twist.
I guess so. Although I don't know. Are the phases? You know, forgive me for maybe using the wrong word here, but are the phases supposed to be diegetic? Like, are those the phases of their plan, or was that just, like, their clever way of breaking up the movie into sections?
I think they said phase one, phase two, phase. But he's like, now it's time for phase two. Like, he's like. Phase one.
Sometimes they did, but for phase three, it was just a title card. Title card during the
I thought after phase two. Like, phase two is, like, you know, he's sitting outside. He's like, oh, you did this, kid? And then he's like, and then the guy, and then he's like, you're never going to take it up on me. I'm the wolf.
And he walks away, and then, like, you know, the shepherd guy calls the phone. He's like, "Yo, what's up? Yeah, man's binds. Time for phase three." And he clicks it, and that made me think, like, "Oh, phase three is gonna be like,
yeah, some escalation.
Escalation somehow,
or at least like a plan, something that they could have planned. Because there's like no way that they could have planned for that whole thing.
Yeah, phase three was just like, okay, now we're gonna corner him and be like, at his party, and be like, oh, you need to do this, and then maybe later after the fact they named it the twist, you know. I don't know.
Yeah,
phase three is where they the shepherd buys a gun.
I mean,
I would have made the movie a lot shorter. Yeah, true.
Dude, there are so many times when Wolf almost died, like in the car.
So many times he should have died. Crazy,
this kid like fucking opened up this car and didn't like. I really thought like what he was gonna do was like cut the brakes or something.
Yeah,
like, that's where I thought that was heading.
Yeah, I thought there was gonna be murder involved, but no, just a fun, harmless prank, I guess. I don't know.
I just thought like really dramatic, extreme stuff, like that murder, like Home Alone.
Yeah.
Home Alone, yeah, like, more... murder, like things that should kill people but don't.
Like jumping out of an airplane, just holding onto someone. I think that our last question has to be time to be honest now, as we know honesty isn't overrated, and tell your deepest, darkest secret. So, Crazy Mike, you're up first.
My deepest, darkest secret?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. You know, I can't do that. I don't think you guys want to be friends with me after.
It's okay. No, honesty is not overrated, so... That's what
tell the truth.
Yeah, tell the truth.
Honesty is not overrated. you guys know how I just came up with Crazy Mike, like that was something that I just came up with, like as original.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, so there was this essay I found. I was driving around in my limo and I found this little kid Ryan. He left behind a piece of paper and it said Crazy Mike on it. I just ran with it. I just fucking ran with it, and now I'm haunted by the specter of this guy, of this child.
That's amazing. Well,
as the child tried to prank you.
Yeah, remember that time I shaved my head? That was actually an elaborate prank by the child.
Makes sense.
Well, guys, I'm not going to answer the question because I think Mike's was good enough.
Yeah. That was better than anything I could come up with.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Indeed.
Thank you guys so much for listening to our podcast, to our many tens of viewers, I'm sure. Ones of viewers, zeros of viewers.
Are we
going to
upload this on Spotify? We should upload this on Spotify.
Yeah,
we should put it on Apple Music first.
Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Red, Reddit.
Yeah, we'll tell you where to listen.
I mean,
once we
if
have
you're
that
listening
figured
to
out.
It, you probably know how to listen to it.
That is true.
No, you don't. You know all the different ways you can listen to it. What if we have a super fan that wants to support us?
Yeah, check out our Patreon.
Exclamation point G Fuel in the chat. You'll get a buy some
20%
G
off G Fuel. Use 20%
off?
Code Cinephile.
If you viewer personally give me $1 million, we might do a live stream. So that's
if you,
something to consider.
At some point, maybe we'll have social media accounts. I don't know. This is all very short term.
This is the inaugural podcast. Yeah. So we're growing. And,
you
know,
you guys should download this. You guys should download this because this is going to get deleted off the internet once we make it big.
No, well, doubtless.
The weird pedophilia jokes and anti-Semitism. Because we're going to deny. You can say that we did this, but we're going to deny it.
This
we're
is episode zero. It never happened. But you're still going to listen to it.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm Kelly.
You're supposed to say I'm Mason.
I was waiting for you, Crazy Mike. Fuck. All right. Let's take it from the top.
Thank you very much for listening after all of that. I'm Kelly.
I'm Mason. Fuck, I fucked it up again. I'm sorry.
And I'm Crazy Mike.
Let's fucking go. Thanks for listening to this podcast.
Cinephonies, a great podcast. Probably
don't forget to hit that bell. Hit that MS like button. Comment, subscribe. Follow us on Twitter.
the official movie podcast of the Republican Party and the Zionist movement of the United States of America.
Chaim, God is with us. We will cleanse those filthy Palestinians off the land. Kill those.